This is Audible.
Hyperion Audiobooks presents Fish for Life, A Remarkable Way to Achieve Your Dreams. Written by Stephen C. Lundeen, Ph.D., John Christensen, and Harry Paul. Read by Karen McHugh and Sarah Krieger, with an introduction and conclusion by Stephen C. Lundeen.
Introduction.
When I was 17, I began what I now consider to be the six summers that shaped my life. For six consecutive summers, I spent 14 weeks working at Camp Courage. Camp Courage, a camp for children with serious physical challenges, such as cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, was truly a magical place. The kids were given the opportunity to enjoy all the regular camp activities, such as swimming, canoeing, overnights, and cookouts, only with the always ready assistance of a few dozen teenage counselors. Parents benefited by getting a short break from caregiving, and counselors were the unknowing recipients of valuable life lessons, lessons that sometimes lay dormant for years before revealing themselves. I was such a recipient, and my lessons were many. The culture of Camp Courage made a lasting and important impact on the way I view the world. It was the most upbeat, energetic, joyous, can-do, happy place I ever worked. It also had an element of radical authenticity and honesty that would bring to the surface all that was not real. Laziness and phoniness were exposed quickly by the intense, close-knit environment. At the time, I was unaware of how rare such workplaces were. We had a lot of fun at Camp Courage, and the kids were fantastic. I remember seeing these children confront their physical limitations with attitudes that earned my lasting respect. They were my role models for expressing freedom in the face of limitations. Though they were limited physically, they made up for it by exhibiting the freedom to try just about anything, and they brought out the best in us. We wanted to make their summer special, and we were aware that not all of the campers would live to return the next year. It would be 40 years before I labeled the Camp Courage way of being present in the world the fish philosophy. A chance event in Seattle was the catalyst. My colleague John Christensen needed to stay over a Saturday night in Seattle after spending a week filming the poet David White, who is known for taking his poetry into business organizations. John went shopping and happened upon a fish market that was so alive with positive energy that the documentary filmmaker in him just had to capture it. He produced a film about the market, and we called it Fish. While the film was being edited, I wrote a book that we also called Fish. After that, the fish philosophy was out of the tank. Wherever you find the fish philosophy, you will find the following ingredients, although the proportions may vary. Play, fun and lightheartedness, make their day, a focus on engaging others in ways that lift their spirits, be there, living in the present moment and giving others our full attention, and choose your attitude, understanding that whatever attitude you are carrying with you right now, it is the one you're choosing. The book Fish was followed by the stories of real companies captured in Fish Tales. Questions regarding how to keep the fish philosophy alive for the long term are addressed in Fish Sticks. And this book, Fish for Life, is a result of something marvelous that happened as I traveled the world speaking about fish. Those I met would often share their fish stories from the office and then add, often in conspiratorial whispers, "You know, this fish stuff works at home, too." And with only a little encouragement, they would tell me their personal fish stories. It became clear that at the end of the workday, lunch buckets and briefcases often carried something unusual home from the workplace. Nestled among the business documents, coffee thermoses, and leftovers was the fish philosophy. Fish for Life is a story of what can happen when fish goes home.
Mary Jane and Lonnie.
4 years had passed since Lonnie proposed to Mary Jane. They'd been sitting in their favorite coffee shop, deep in the conversation of two people who woke up one day to find that a close friendship had become something romantic. Mary Jane had asked for some of the scone they typically shared, 80-20, and when she looked down at what was pushed across the table, it was not a scone at all. It was the large head of a monkfish with its mouth wide open, and in that massive open mouth was an engagement ring that, after a pause born out of shock, she gleefully accepted and allowed Lonnie to put it on her finger. Lonnie had access to an ample supply of fish heads from which to choose, as he was a well-known fishmonger at a famous Seattle fish market. Pike Place Fish was not only a fish market, but also a tourist destination where people assembled each day in large crowds to watch the action and left with smiles and stories, as well as fish. In fact, it was at the market that Lonnie and Mary Jane first met 5 years before, when she wandered in on her lunch break, attracted by the energy and carrying her brown bag lunch and a big problem. Lonnie, seeing the stress lines on her face, did what he does so well. He engaged her in a lighthearted conversation until the stress lines were erased by the natural smile lines underneath. He brought lightness to her countenance while he listened to her story. Lonnie had no idea at the time of all the stress Mary Jane was feeling. He just responded to another human being, a human being who seemed to need a boost. Mary Jane had lost her husband, and as a single mother of two, she had definitely needed the financial benefits of the promotion she had been offered. Even though she was aware of the terrible reputation of the group she would manage, she'd accepted the position. She had hoped the problems in her new department had been exaggerated, but she soon realized they were actually worse than she could have imagined. She immediately encountered difficulties with her entrenched, entitled, and cynical staff. The day she walked into the market, she had no idea how to begin changing things, and was deeply concerned and frightened. As Mary Jane and Lonnie talked that day, Mary Jane described her promotion at First Guarantee Financial and the disgruntled and caustic staff she'd inherited. Lonnie burst into laughter when she told him the managers at First Guarantee referred to her staff as the toxic energy dump. Lonnie was impressed by her determination and curious about life in the big office buildings that overlooked the market. Mary Jane wanted to know more about why the market was so full of energy and whether there were lessons to be learned from the market that could help her staff. Lonnie was delighted to be of service, and not just because it was his nature. He also wanted to spend more time with her, being highly attracted from the first moment of their meeting. And so Lonnie agreed to explain the inner workings of the market at a later date. Mary Jane was a good student and began to grow as a leader. Before long, she had her staff coming to the market looking for ways to bring some of the energy to the third floor of First Guarantee, where their amazing accomplishments eventually became folklore. Mary Jane and her team had discovered for themselves the old wisdom brought to life at the fish market, and they created on the third floor a workplace so attractive that there was a waiting list of applicants from other parts of the company. The work itself had not changed, but the way they chose to do their work each day had. As they evolved as a team, they created an appealing space where internal and external customers were served like they had never been served before. But all of that was years ago. Mary Jane had since married Lonnie, been promoted again, and become swept up in the daily, hectic crush of life and work. What has happened to my life? As Mary Jane Ramirez cleaned the house, she dusted around a small display of wedding photographs above the downstairs fireplace. She took a closer look at the pictures. The mix of fishmongers and First Guarantee employees outside the church always made her smile. She glanced out the window at the brilliant day and thought, "This is the kind of day you don't talk about with those who don't live here. If they knew we had days like this, they might move here and crowd the freeways even further." When she worked her way to the upstairs loft office, she could see the Space Needle, downtown skyscrapers, uptown high-rises, and the sparkling beauty of Puget Sound. Each of the windows in this room revealed a feast for the eyes, and the walls were covered with the most recent family photos. This had always been her favorite room. Its contents reflected her new life with Lonnie. But this morning she noticed something. All of the pictures were from the first 2 years of their marriage. Where had the last 2 years gone? A desk sat in front of each of the four Victorian windows. She remembered it was not uncommon in the early days of their marriage to find all four occupied in the evening. A typical night found Brad and Sarah, her children, as well as Lonnie, each with schoolwork or reading, and Mary Jane with the residue of daily work tasks. She strived during those first few years to protect her family time, and she was embarrassingly thankful for those evenings she could combine job and family by finishing up her first guarantee work with her two children from her first marriage and her new husband busy around her. Suddenly feeling anxious and a bit dizzy, Mary Jane sat down at her desk. The room and all the photographs had triggered something unsettling. What happened to the dream that was to be my new life? I feel like I'm caught in a fast-flowing river of activity over which I have little control. What happened to the quiet, intimate moments Lonnie and I enjoyed when we were dating and just married? Mary Jane glanced down at her desktop. Sticking out from under the calendar was the edge of a sheet of paper that she recognized immediately, in the way you would recognize an old friend. The words written on that piece of paper, and the ones underneath, had been a daily reminder during the most difficult time at work. She looked at the wrinkled and coffee-stained paper. The words had started as notes from her visits to the fish market and evolved over many rewrites to become a precious guide for her work at First Guarantee. So much has happened since that day I wandered into the fish market with a big problem and no solution. She pulled out the weathered pieces of paper and looked at them more closely. It's time to recopy these, only this time I'm going to enter them in my journal. I guess I have a bit of a paper and pen fetish, she admitted to herself, as she examined the neatly arranged contents of the bottom drawer. From underneath her colored pens, she opened the box that contained her special journal paper and extracted a half dozen crisp, pre-punched sheets of Levenger's finest. A composer might use parchment, she thought. It's time these notes were treated in a manner consistent with their importance. Then, as she had done a half dozen times before, she began to copy what had come to be called the fish philosophy, revising and clarifying, as she always did, based on her life experiences since the last rewrite. The words natural energy were written on a post-it note and attached to the old version of the fish philosophy. Why did I put this here? She put the note aside for the moment.
The fish philosophy. The fish philosophy is a way of life based on old wisdom that is easily viewed at the Pike Place Fish Market because it's on the surface there all day long, every day. The 12 fishmongers who work in those 1,200 square feet of energetic retail space embody the fish philosophy. The wisdom there is like a rock outcropping that gives others a view of the deeper structure below the surface. This old wisdom was not created by the market. It has been around almost since humans began to walk upright and converse. Rather, the fish philosophy was discovered by this small group of fishmongers as they engaged in a process to achieve grace and excellence in their lives at work. They realized that playing around and having fun, making people's days brighter, being present, and choosing their attitudes consciously all contributed to a great workplace. The terms play, make their day, be there, and choose your attitude became shorthand for their version of this old wisdom. The four ingredients of the fish philosophy were mixed in proportions unique to the market and fine-tuned until the staff's commitment to being world-famous led them to become world-famous. Now people arrive at the market from all over the world just to see this phenomenon firsthand. And most also go home with fish for the refrigerator, pictures for the scrapbook, and stories and memories for the heart.
Lonnie helped me discover the fish philosophy, and I helped my staff at First Guarantee do the same. Then my colleagues in other departments saw what we were doing, and that led to their own discoveries. Other companies also heard about our successes at First Guarantee and figured if it could be done at a financial institution, it might be possible anywhere. At the very least, they were intrigued. However, some of these organizations just wanted the results of fish without really committing to their own journey of discovery. They heard about the dramatic improvements at First Guarantee and wanted results of their own, and they wanted those results immediately. Mary Jane thought, "Now I remember why I wrote that note to myself about natural energy." But many of these organizations that wanted instant results didn't want to change in any substantial way. This helped me understand that fish only works with natural energy. You can inspire colleagues to discover and practice the fish philosophy, but you can't conscript or coerce them. You can model fish, but you can't demand fish. Natural energy is the key to success when you need the full commitment of those involved.
Most of us have experienced quite enough programs in our lives. As a result, we shut down the minute we think someone is trying to do something to us or manipulate us rather than support us. But while you can't tell people to fish, you can model, expect, inspire, discuss, portray, and live fish. It may take a bit of patience, but most people want a better life for themselves and will join in once they know it is authentic. Authentic journeys are fueled by natural energy.
As she began to rewrite her notes on the first ingredient of the fish philosophy, play, she happened to look over at her color-coded calendar. That's playful, she thought. Mary Jane had developed a color code so she could see with one glance the balance of activities in the different facets of her life. It was a quick life balance indicator. She used green ink for entries that related to work, blue for community activities, yellow for family and marriage, orange for friends and self. Mary Jane looked down at a sea of green with a sprinkling of blue coloring her calendar. Have I let quality time with Lonnie, the children, my friends, and by myself get crowded out by the green and blue of life? Things have gone well at work, but now the rest of my life is out of whack. This is not what I imagined that day when I looked down at the open mouth of a fish and saw a ring. I love Lonnie, and I love the way he is bonded with the children. But what has happened to the fun? When's the last time I went to the gym, spent time with friends, or read a book? It was then she saw the one yellow inscription on the calendar, and it was placed on today's date. Oh my goodness, where is the time gone? I wanted to be at the market in time to help Lonnie celebrate his last day there.
Lonnie's last day at the fish market.
Mary Jane drove down Queen Anne Hill and parked near the market. She walked the four long blocks to Pike Place, and as she approached, she heard the familiar sounds. "One salmon flying away to Stockholm," shouted Wolf as he launched a beautiful Copper River salmon toward the counter, to the absolute delight of the couple standing next to him. His customers had come all the way from Sweden to visit the world-famous Pike Place Fish Market, and their faces were wet with tears of laughter. "One salmon flying away to Stockholm," the fish guys all chorused. This place just gets better with age, thought Mary Jane as she walked into the market. Now where is that man of mine? "Board in the sky," yelled one of the guys as he returned a clipboard to the counter. "Board in the sky," echoed the others. A large group of children were grouped around the monkfish rigged to open and close its mouth. They were squealing with delight as a tall, hip-booted fishmonger, affectionately named Insect, worked his magic. "Hey, darling, what do you think of my garb?" It was Lonnie. Mary Jane looked at her husband and audibly gasped. He was wearing a gold crown made from a well-weathered shark jaw and a garish purple velvet robe that had been decorated with strips of paper, each containing a phrase. She read some of the inscriptions. "This is my last day, so let's party. Play. Make my day. You can take the man out of the market, but you can't take the market out of the man. Gone fishing. One crab at a time, please. Have fun. Want to see my shrimp? Go fish. Why not sing for the halibut?" There were so many strips of paper attached to the robe that Lonnie looked a bit like a living crossword puzzle. His hip boots had also been written on by a number of unsteady hands, as each of the guys had added their personal thoughts with a grease pencil. "How are you doing, honey?" "It's harder to say goodbye than I thought it would be," Lonnie replied. "I'm lucky that my last day is a busy day. No time to think about it." "Well, just think of how excited you are to start school and how we've looked forward to having some time to ourselves again." "That'll be fantastic, won't it? Imagine me studying to be a nurse." He bent down and gave her a quick peck, only to have Wolf shout out,
"Hey, none of that lovey-dovey stuff."
A slight blush formed on Mary Jane's cheeks. She smiled at the always playful Wolf. "I need to get back to work, sweetheart. Look at all these people. Who would have thought it? They're here to say goodbye to you, Lonnie. The article in the Seattle Times about your retirement seems to have brought out many of your local customers." The article described the fish market as a local treasure that had become an international tourist destination. On one Saturday alone, a Times reporter had interviewed visitors from 23 different countries and asked each how they had heard about the market and why they had come. The answers made it clear that 1,200 square feet of retail space in Pike Place was a magnet that drew people from all over the world. It didn't seem to matter where on the globe they resided. The fish market was on their lists of places I want to visit someday. "I'll be across the street in the usual spot, or I may run up to the office. I miss the kids, but it's nice to have some free time. Who knows? I just might journal a bit." "Thanks, honey. Some of the guys are leaving early to decorate the party room at Takara. I can't really predict how long I'll need to be here. It could be a few more hours before I can leave." "I'm looking forward to some time to sip a latte and do some journaling, so don't worry about a thing. Just enjoy." "See you later." And with a final peck on the cheek, Lonnie was off to tend to a large family gathered around a grouper. Before he was through, he would make their day, be there, and sell them $243 worth of fish that would first fly to the counter and then to Oklahoma. Mary Jane crossed the street to the coffee shop where Lonnie had taken her 5 years earlier, when she brought her children with her to the market, the same coffee shop where he had later proposed. It was here that he had coached her on the four ingredients of fish. She smiled as she remembered how Brad, who was just 6 at the time, had talked about his trip to the market and nothing else for weeks. Lonnie has been so good for Brad. He really needed a man in his life, and he took to Lonnie immediately. There may have been signs that something personal might develop between Mary Jane and Lonnie during those first encounters, but she was too engrossed with her problems at first guarantee to notice. She thought about her 2 children, now 11 and 7, and hoped they were having a good time with their grandparents in Los Angeles. Brad was 4, and Sarah was less than 1 when her husband Ken died. Ken's parents, a wonderful couple, had reached out to them and had stayed delightfully involved in their lives. As she sipped her coffee, she struggled with the idea that it was Lonnie's last day at the market. In his 12 years there, he had become an institution. She thought about how Lonnie had dropped out of high school, but later, with help from Jack, the owner of Pike Place Fish, and the conscientious grandmother who raised Lonnie, he had earned his GED. That success gave him a much-needed boost in self-esteem, and he then enrolled in Seattle Technical College. With Jack's financial and personal support, he persisted. Last year, Lonnie finished the licensed practical nurse program, going to school at night and doing his required internship on weekends. After receiving his LPN degree, he continued working at the market during the week and accepted an offer to continue weekends as an LPN at County General Hospital, where he had done his internship. This was the first Saturday in months that Lonnie wasn't at County General at 6:30 in the morning. Instead, today, he was at Pike Place at 6 in the morning. Mary Jane thought with a grim smile, "Well, that'll change. I've been looking forward to the day when our lives can once again have the sense of normalcy that was lost when Lonnie started working on weekends. The choices we made, like my spending so many hours volunteering at the community center, all seems so logical on paper, but the reality has sure put a strain in our life together. Well, hopefully that strain will end soon." As she readjusted herself in the chair, she was confronted with an unwelcome thought. There had been less exercise and more comfort food in her life recently, and the results were all too clear. 15 pounds I didn't have 3.5 years ago. How could I let that happen? But Mary Jane knew how it had happened. One choice and one moment at a time. As the pressure of her demands crowded out what used to be a dedication to fitness. The loneliness of a life dominated by work and too many weekends home alone with children and no husband to provide personal breaks. It was just too much of an ordeal to get to the gym. simply too much of a struggle to make good food choices. I really need to do something about my weight and fitness, and the way work seems to dominate my life.
An unexpected conversation with Wolf.
Earth to Mary Jane. Mary Jane looked up at the market's biggest character, Wolf. Hello, Wolf. I guess I was just lost in thought. Sit down for a minute.
This is a hard day for me, Mary Jane.
I know that what Lonnie's doing is good for him, and I'm happy for him, but I sure am going to miss the guy around here. Mary Jane was a bit taken aback. She had never heard much in the way of feeling or sentiment from him. He was usually quite gruff. Although everyone knew he had a heart of gold from his kind and generous actions. That makes two of us, Wolf. I'm having a hard day as well. Wolf sat down. Then Mary Jane remembered something Lonnie had told her. Say, Wolf, Lonnie said you and your wife are adopting a child. How is that progressing? Wolf lit up like a Roman candle.
Oh, Mary Jane, we just finalized the adoption 2 days ago. It's the best thing that ever happened to us. It's a miracle. Babies are amazing.
Congratulations, Wolf. When you say it was a miracle, do you mean the odds of adopting are not good? I read that it's become quite difficult with some of the international developments.
We are fortunate, but that's not what I'm talking about. We almost didn't make it as a couple.
Excuse me, Wolf. I didn't mean to pry into your private life.
That's cool, Mary Jane. Things are much better now, and I don't mind talking to my best friend's wife about a happy ending. Say, I'm hoping that you and Lonnie will be godparents for little Justin.
Mary Jane was stunned. This was more than Wolf had said to her at any one time since the day they had met at the market, and she had met Wolf's wife only briefly at a couple parties. She remembered Roberta as a tall, striking woman who towered over Wolf by at least 6 inches. Wolf, I'm sure we would be delighted to be godparents, if that's what you and Roberta decide.
We've already talked about it, and we think you two are great examples of the values we want for Justin.
He picked up on the sad look that passed over her face.
What is it, Mary Jane?
Oh, I've been thinking a lot about my life today. To be honest, I've been feeling a bit sorry for myself. I guess that happens sometimes when a busy life slows down enough to allow perspective. I know Lonnie and I are right for each other, but what difference does it make if we never see each other?
You two push it pretty hard, don't you? I know everything Lonnie has on his plate, and I can only imagine how busy your life is now that you're famous and have a new promotion.
I'm not famous, Wolf.
Lonnie told me you were asked to speak at the Seattle Chamber of Commerce.
Yes, but it's no big deal.
It is to me.
Mary Jane felt the need to change the subject, and she was curious about something Wolf had said. May I ask you a personal question, Wolf?
Sure.
How did you turn things around?
The same way you turned things around at First Guarantee.
But First Guarantee is a business. We're talking about a marriage. Wolf just smiled.
Did you take the ideas from the market home?
You took the fish philosophy home, didn't you, Wolf?
Wolf just smiled again.
And it helped, didn't it?
Wolf smiled a third time.
Will you tell me what you did, please?
Wolf shrugged in a slightly positive way.
Please.
But before Wolf could respond, Mary Jane's cell phone began to ring.
Excuse me, Wolf. Might be one of the kids.
Wolf smiled a knowing smile and gave a quick wave as he headed back to the market.
Caught in the middle.
Mary Jane answered the phone while quickly looking at the caller ID. Hello, Mom? But it wasn't Mom.
This is Officer Williams from the Seattle Police Department. I'm sitting here with your mother in front of the Sheraton Civic Center. She's quite disoriented, and I don't think it would be a good idea if she drives her car. Could someone from the family come and pick her up?
Is she all right? Was there an accident?
She's fine, and there wasn't an accident. But since she was driving on the wrong side of the street, there could easily have been an accident, if I hadn't pulled her over. She didn't remember your number, but we found it programmed into her cell phone.
Mary Jane had a quick image of Sarah programming Grandma's cell phone a few weeks back and was silently thankful. "I'll take my own car home and be right down in a cab. May I speak with her?" "Yes, ma'am. And I really don't think your mother should be driving at any time." "Mary Jane, is that you?" "Yes, Mom. I'll be right down." "These streets are so confusing. I wish they wouldn't change things down here." "We'll talk about it later, Mom. I'll be right there." Mary Jane raced to her car. She didn't even stop to tell Lonnie what had happened. 2 hours later, she escorted her mom up the short flight of stairs to her mother's suburban apartment. Officer Williams had been pleasant and understanding, explaining that his own mother was the same age, but it was clear he thought her mother should no longer be driving. Mary Jane had to concur after she heard the whole story. Mary Jane walked into the apartment with her. "Mom, I need to get back down to the market, and I'm going to use your car because mine is at home. After the policeman called me, I took a cab from home after dropping off my car. I need to use your car, and later we need to talk about your driving." "I wouldn't know what to do without my car, dear. I use it for everything, and other transportation isn't that convenient out here in the suburbs." "I know, Mom. I'm sorry, but we want you safe. We love you. Let's talk some more later. I'll bet you're ready to put your feet up." Her mother sank into her big chair and said, "When will you be bringing my car back?" "I really don't think you should be driving, Mom." The officer was quite emphatic. "We'll talk about it soon. In the meantime, I'll make sure you get to where you need to go." "It wasn't my fault, dear. They changed the streets. How will I get groceries? How will I get to church? How will I get to the photography club? What if you need me and I have to get over to your house quickly?" "Trust me, Mom. We'll work it out. But I need to get back to the market. Did you know this was Lonnie's last day there?" Mary Jane gave her mother a quick recap in an attempt to take her mind off the car. "That's nice, dear. I think I'll lie down for a minute. I'll call you later, Mom, and we can talk some more."
Back to the market.
Mary Jane returned to the market with a guilty feeling. She had just abandoned a needy parent. What happened to all the parking spots? What'll I do on Monday? Monday is the quarterly strategic planning meeting. I can't miss that. Where are all the parking spots? Mary Jane drove for blocks before finding a parking spot. It was now past peak time at the market, but she could see it was still busy as she approached. None of the armless chairs near the fish stand were available, so she once again wedged herself into a chair at the coffee shop. She glanced across the street, but couldn't see Lonnie. I hope he wasn't worried. Oh my goodness, I turned my cell phone off at the police station and forgot to turn it back on. She turned it back on, but there was no indication of any missed calls. Recognizing that she needed to calm down, she pulled out her journal and set it on the table in front of her. Opening her journal, she turned to the pages where she kept her favorite poems. Here she found a poem by David White called "Sweet Darkness." "Sweet Darkness" by David White. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision is gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your womb tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all the other worlds, except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that doesn't bring you alive is too small for you. Is my life too small for me? Have I made my life too small for me? I think what is happening with Lonnie and his career is positive, but then why aren't I happier and more alive?
Lonnie's new life.
Lonnie had been accepted by Washington State University College of Nursing in a special program. He'd be able to complete the RN requirements and earn a BSN in 3 years while continuing to work part-time as an LPN. A lot of abbreviations, to say the least. The Washington State program was designed to attract more men and women to the nursing profession at a time when it was hard to find enough registered nurses to staff the area's hospitals. Targeting married students with an interest in healthcare, but who couldn't afford to be totally jobless, it was perfect. A low-interest loan was part of the package. But it meant that Lonnie had to leave the market. Mary Jane felt both pride in his accomplishments and sadness about his leaving the place where he had spent much of his adult life and some of his childhood. She knew Jack and the Fish guys, and his deceased grandmother, were the only family he had ever known. But now we are a family, she thought. Mary Jane looked over at the market and could see the first signs of cleanup as the crowd thinned and the Fish guys began putting things away. She knew from experience that she had another half hour to herself, not enough time to go up to the office. With more time to kill, as the Saturday afternoon shadows lengthened, Mary Jane relaxed and let her mind wander. Across the street, the playful and sometimes raucous noise from the market tapered off as the day drew to a close. What am I going to do about Mom? She can't continue driving. She doesn't want to move into our extra room because she says she's afraid of losing her independence and thinks she'll be too much of a burden on us. But without a car, how much independence will she have? And she forgets important things like taking her blood pressure medicine. And life is moving so fast. What about Lonnie? Is it realistic to think things will get better when he stops working on the weekends? What'll we do to bring back the fun we had just living together? Then she remembered her conversation with Wolf. It seemed like a long time ago, but she realized it was only a few hours. I've always thought of Fish as a work thing, but wisdom probably isn't bound to a location. Her attention was drawn to the street. Jack, the owner of the market, was walking toward her with Lonnie. Hi, Mary Jane. This has been quite a day, and tonight should be a blast. But the Saturday after next should be even more interesting. You didn't tell Lonnie, did you? Lonnie is clueless, Mary Jane responded with a smile and a bit too much enjoyment. Hey, wait a minute. It's not fair to gang up on me like this, said Lonnie. Mary Jane says you're available in 2 weeks, and we have one more event planned to honor your retirement. We, Jack actually giggled a bit here, then stopped to compose himself. We are going to retire your apron. You're going to what? We're going to retire your apron, Lonnie. We have a place on the back wall above the counter where we'll hang it. Sort of like the football and baseball thing. You know, MJ, Dr. J, the two babes, and now Lonnie. It'll be the first apron on the wall of fame for world-famous Pike Place fishmongers. Who knows? You might get nominated to the Fishmongers Hall of Fame. Lonnie was so tired, all he could come up with was, whatever. And Mary Jane, I think Lonnie has some good news to share. At least I hope it's good news. Well, I need to go home and pick up my wife. See you later.
The Volatile Drive Home.
Lonnie and Mary Jane made the long walk to the back alley parking lot, holding hands, looking in store windows, and talking about the day at the market. Lonnie had a burst of energy and wanted to share the conversations he had had with old customers. When they finally arrived at the car, Lonnie looked at it oddly and then got in without saying a word. As they started down Fourth Avenue for the short drive to Queen Anne Hill, Lonnie blurted out, "We could have walked home in the time it took to get to the car." That was all it took for Mary Jane to burst into tears. She was crying so hard she had to pull over, as Lonnie sat completely confused by the outburst. Although Lonnie had learned in his 3 years of marriage that some things should not be rushed, they had only enough time left to change clothes and drive to Takara Restaurant if they wanted to be on time. And here they were sitting 4 blocks from home, waiting for Mary Jane to stop crying. In the pressure of the moment, Lonnie said, "There is clearly something going on, Mary Jane, and I want to be there for you, sweetheart, but we only have 30 minutes before dinner." Mary Jane turned stone cold as she looked at Lonnie and wiped her eyes. "You can go by yourself. There doesn't seem to be any time for me in your life anyway. Did you notice that I'm driving my mom's car? Or were you so wrapped up in yourself that you didn't see that either? Do you ever think about me while you're running from one thing to another?" Each word had the hard edge of anger, and Lonnie sat back in shock. Mary Jane pulled back into traffic, and they rode the rest of the way in silence. As they pulled into the driveway, Lonnie had pulled himself together enough to simply say, "I'm sorry." Mary Jane sat staring ahead for a long moment, and then turned to Lonnie. "I know I've been busy also, too busy to even notice how frustrated I'd become with our life. But this is your big day, and I don't want to completely ruin it for you. My stress isn't a result of what happened today. It just surfaced today. Let's go to the party and try to have a good time, if we can." "You mean the world to me, Mary Jane. And I think of Brad and Sarah as my children now, even though I know they'll always have a connection to their real dad that I can't replace. Can we at least talk on the way to the party? I really do want to know what's happened and why you're driving your mom's car." And so they changed clothes, and on the way to the party, she described the facts of her day, avoiding her concerns about an expanding waistline and everything else that was troubling her. She simply focused on the dilemma with her mom. On arriving at the party, they allowed themselves to quickly get caught up in the festivities.
Brad and Sarah return.
Lonnie and Mary Jane stood together by the Alaska Airlines gate as the passengers from Los Angeles disembarked. Watching the diversity of people from L.A. is usually entertaining, but after a late night and an early morning, they were a bit numb and drowsy as they waited for the kids. Because Brad and Sarah were unaccompanied minors, UAMs as they're called by the airline personnel, Lonnie and Mary Jane were allowed to come all the way to the gate on the other side of the security stop. They could hear Brad and Sarah before they could see them. "And we rode on Space Mountain 2 times, and I closed my eyes and raised my hands, and it was so cool. Mom! Lonnie!" An amused flight attendant handed the children over, along with the paperwork, as she worked around the perimeter of an all-family hug. The ride home was full of stories about the trip to L.A. until Brad, always the intuitive sort, spoke up sharply. "Is everything all right?" Mary Jane decided to limit her response. "Grandma had some difficulties while you were gone." "Is she all right? I mean, safe and everything?" "Yes, Brad, she's fine and is looking forward to seeing you two."
"Why are we driving her car?"
"Well, she had a problem driving the wrong way on a one-way street, and I decided it would be better if she didn't have access to her car. In fact, I don't think she should be driving at all anymore." Brad thought about that for a while and said, "But she does so much stuff. How will she get around?" "We haven't worked out the details yet. This just happened yesterday. But Lonnie and I want you and Sarah to be a part of the discussion about Grandma. Some of the possible solutions will affect you."
"You mean Sarah and I get to talk about adult stuff? Wow!"
Mary Jane and Lonnie exchanged smiles. And then Mary Jane remembered that her darling boy's difficulties at school still had not been resolved. A few days ago, his teacher had told her Brad had become increasingly moody in class. She put the thought aside. "I can't solve it now. Lonnie and I need to call an adult timeout while you two unpack. Do you remember about adult timeouts?"
"Yes, Mom."
"But before we go home, I have a surprise."
"I know," said Sarah. "We're going to see Grandma."
"Yes, we are.
How did you guess that surprise so easily?"
"Aren't we driving toward her house?"
Lonnie added, "Your sense of direction is so good, I think you should drive, Sarah." Sarah was still giggling when they arrived to take Grandma to brunch.
A serious conversation.
Lonnie and Mary Jane met that evening in the shared office space upstairs while the kids finished unpacking. After a brunch with their often confused grandma, Brad and Sarah had a better idea of the dilemma. As they pulled their chairs together, the gravity of their discussion was weighing heavily on both of them. Mary Jane looked directly at Lonnie.
"I'm not sure my mom should be alone. She seems to have trouble remembering the everyday important things, and I worry about her remembering to take her medications. I hadn't noticed that before yesterday. Had you?" Not to the extent we saw today. It worries me, too. I've heard of something called small strokes, and I have seen people in the hospital with similar symptoms. Her confusion may be a sign that she's had some mini-strokes and didn't even know it. Sometimes the confusion's only temporary. A doctor's appointment is definitely a priority. Definitely. Lonnie, help me think this through. She shouldn't drive. Agreed?
She was asking about her car at brunch and when we will be bringing it back, but yes, I agree.
And she has made it clear she doesn't want to bother us by moving. Do you think that will change? A nursing home or assisted living center seems like such a dramatic change.
I'm not an expert on this, Mary Jane, but sometimes the elderly emphasize not being a burden. It doesn't necessarily mean that she would refuse to move in with us. She may simply be trying to respect our life.
But what about you, Lonnie? Would you want my mom in the house 24/7?
It would be a big change, Mary Jane.
But when your mom drove the wrong way in a one-way street, all of our lives changed. It's going to take a lot of juggling and planning to do what we need to do for her, regardless of where she lives. If she stays in her apartment, the distance between her apartment and our home is an inconvenience.
Lonnie looked at Mary Jane thoughtfully and then said, I've heard about adult communities where they have a full range of services for seniors. The hospital runs a community like that called Forest Glen. The pictures show a rural setting with lots of trees, and I think it's actually closer than her apartment and doesn't require crossing town.
And there's home care and Meals on Wheels, added Mary Jane. She could move closer and have that kind of support.
But what do you want, Mary Jane?
I think what I want is too much to ask of you, and I don't know if Mom would agree anyway.
I need to tell you something important, Mary Jane. My grandma went into a nursing home, and I remember feeling so guilty about not being able to do more, but as a single guy, I just couldn't see taking on the responsibility. You see, it's been a tradition in my culture to bring the elderly into the family home, and it seems like the right thing to do. I want your mom here, if you do. I think it would be the right thing for us to do, and a great life experience for the kids.
Oh, Lonnie. Mary Jane swallowed a couple of times but couldn't continue, so she simply got up and gave Lonnie a hug. Finally, she was able to finish what she was saying. That is so generous, sweetheart. Do you think it's time to get the kids involved in this discussion?
Absolutely.
The Family Council.
Shortly after inviting the children upstairs, Brad surprised them all by saying, I think she just needs to know we really, really want her to live with us. So, do we really want her to live with us? I do. That'd be cool having Grandma in the house. Brad, that is so kind and generous of you.
Brad looked at Mary Jane with a proud set to his face. Thanks, Mom. I love Grandma.
Me too, said Sarah. And she can sleep with me.
Sarah's innocent comment evoked big grins all around and some emotion in Mary Jane.
I think she might prefer the guest room because it has a bathroom so close, but you are also kind, Sarah. We certainly have the room in this big old place, and Mom is quite capable of making a contribution to the household chores and to the budget. We have one big challenge, though.
What's that, Mom?
Brad said it. We need her to know we really want her, so she doesn't say no just because she fears being a burden. She has every right to choose her own life, but we don't want her to say no for the wrong reason.
Lonnie added, And if she chooses to move in, our lives will be different for some time to come. For a while, she'll continue being our best babysitter, but eventually, she may require some help herself, like my grandmother did when she broke her hip.
This comment by Lonnie led to a discussion with the children about his life before they knew him, and he shared the tradition of many different cultures of welcoming the elderly in their children's homes. This caused the ever-thoughtful Brad to question how he and Sarah would decide who got to invite Lonnie and Mary Jane into their home when they grew up. Mary Jane felt both relief
and fear as the decision became clear, and the weight of that decision obvious. She blurted out, "It'll be like putting fuel on the fire for us. Our lives are already full to the brim, so much so that..." She stopped as she realized the children were present, and it might not be the best time to expose her and Lonnie's personal problems. She quickly recovered by saying, "I think she will accept our invitation if we convince her we are serious. Brad is right. She needs to know we really want her. Well, I'm not sure exactly how to approach this issue with Grandma, but it's bedtime for all those going to school tomorrow." After the kids were settled, Lonnie looked at Mary Jane and said, "Big day, huh?" "Big day and big weekend. Oddly enough, I'm feeling really hopeful right now, even though I'm overwhelmed by the thought of Mom moving in with us. Are you headed for bed?" "I am. Are you coming?" "Not quite yet, sweetheart. But I know your morning is earlier than mine. I have one phone call to make."
One phone call and then to bed.
Mary Jane returned to the upstairs office, where she had started the crazy weekend dusting and rewriting her notes. She found the phone number for which she was looking. Glancing at her watch, she thought, "I wonder if 9:45 is too late to call Janelle on a Sunday night. I don't think so. She has two little ones and likes the quiet of the evenings to wind down with her husband Jimmy." Janelle Wong had become Mary Jane's closest friend at work. Janelle was the first of her employees to see the possibilities in Fish, and quickly became an ally in the turnaround of the third floor. Already a well-liked supervisor, she demonstrated remarkable leadership ability, and others in the organization began recruiting her. Janelle was committed to the third floor, but Mary Jane encouraged her to consider the offers. A year ago, Janelle accepted a promotion to head up the customer service center, and they talked regularly about work and life. Mary Jane dialed Janelle's number. "Hello, Jimmy. Is it too late to talk with Janelle?" "Thanks." "Hi, Janelle. Are the kids tucked away?" "They're sound asleep, Mary Jane. Is everything all right? This is late for you." "The honest answer is yes and no. Do you have time to join me for lunch next week? I would like your help on something. Wolf and I are going to meet at the market, and I'd like you to be there. That'd be like old times. Just tell me where and when." "I'll let you know when I set it up. Any days better than others?" "I'm open all week except for Monday." "Thanks, Janelle. I'll let you get back to your family. I really appreciate it."